Welcome to the 15th episode of the Nonstop Podcast with Pooja. This is my 1 year anniversary episode, and I have a very fitting guest. She's the ever vibrant Mansi. Mansi is a photographer and also a very good friend. And thank you, Mansi, for coming in and wanting to be a part of this podcast.
Thank you, Pooja. I've never done a podcast before, so I hope I don't blabber too much.
Yeah, so Mansi, you have a photography company.
Yeah.
But before that, I'm sure you were not studying to be a photographer. So what did you do and how did the switch happen?
Actually, funny story, I loved taking photos even when I was a kid. So from 12th, I knew I wanted to study photography and I had to study for my board. Not for my board exams, but instead of studying for board exams, I would be studying for my entrance exams at MOP. So I would watch movies and I would be like, oh, it's all prep because that's what they're going to ask me. But I started photography. I lost my dad when I was much younger and I realized I didn't have any photos of him and I was forgetting what he was like, and I would turn to photos to remember incidents, and there weren't too many. We didn't take too many photos as a family, and I only had access to a camera, so I would just find myself taking pictures of random things we were doing, and I really enjoyed that time. So it just kind of stuck to it. I studied it in college. I did my master's in it at SCAD in Savannah College of Art and Design. Worked at Disney. Yeah. So just kind of knew it was it from 11th and then just stuck with it.
So what do you think is the biggest, prototype of this whole creative process? Because I'm sure, having grown up in a place like India or even Southern India, photography is very segmentized and yeah, this is how a wedding photography has to look. And this is how, a portrait has to look. And there's not a lot of fun element to it. You have been on my wedding as a photographer. And I do still remember some of the images were so fresh and it was very emotionally resonant, and you kind of focus a lot on capturing the emotions rather than everyone just getting into a posture and then guys smile. So how important, I'm sure having stemmed this whole idea from your dad, how important is this emotional factor into the business of wedding photography?
I think it's super important for me, especially because even the clients that I have had so far, I feel like they have understood the kind of work that we do and they respect it, they like it. So most of my clients, 90% of them, they come with the understanding that this is my style. I don't like to pre-plan too many things. I just want to be in the moment, see what's happening, whatever they're feeling, and try to capture that as much as possible. Luckily, on my team, I have enough people who also share the same ideology. So it's been really good and really important and easy for us to, if there's trust with the client, it's easy to just be and get things that are happening in the moment. If there's people want particular things that they want, we try to incorporate that also. But sometimes you can never match what's in their head, that vision. We are not able to get it out fully. So I think the easiest way to deal with people like this is if they just allow us to, whatever's happening, they're enjoying the moment there and we are also enjoying the moment of them enjoying it. So I think that's the, to put them at ease is the first and most biggest task for me personally. But if you go in with it with just, hey, I hope everything comes out well and everything is going to be you trying to do the best you can, I think it just ease is what the... I'm blabbering a bit. No, no. I can cut this out.
No, it's fine. So I just wanted to go back to your whole process of education and photography. So I was recently at the Danish Architectural Museum and I was very impressed because I love the Danish interior. I studied in Stockholm. So everything for me in terms of simple life really resonated with me. And every time I do look at a portrait of yours or a creative image of yours, there's a lot of simplicity behind it. So I'm sure you had a kind of a hint to this whole process. You had someone that you really looked up to or some kind of like you already said, like a memory or a school of thought. What is your kind of process behind this?
So I think in college, when we had to do our masters, it was a lot about, I went when I was very young, I went when I was 21 to do my masters. And right after college, I had no idea what I wanted to do with my work. I had no life experiences to show in my work. And I went to college with multiple people, different ages, 60, 20, married, unmarried, divorced. So that experience itself was so different for me, because more than growing work-wise, I felt like personality, I could just interact with so many people, different people, and that really helped me connect with my clients or my subjects even when I'm shooting them. Feel like just to be able to talk to different kinds of people, all kinds of people, that was like a big learning for me. But for work, so much of that work was just to explore what you're feeling and what you're thinking and to make art. And at 21, you're not looking to make art, you're just... And especially going from here to going to the US, I was told what to do and I did it. But over there, it's all about exploring what you want and what you feel. And so I didn't feel like I went too early. Sometimes I feel like I went too early to study. But working at Disney was, for me, life-changing, because it was something that I wanted to work. I mean, it was a field in which I had interest in, and they had clients lined up, and it was at Disney World. So you could go, you could shoot, you could edit. So a lot of my life skills, I feel like it stemmed from them and just the people around them who I was working with. I was edit for a lot for a lot of the other photographers there. So I think a lot of my life skills that I use today, I got from working after and at my internship.
Okay, and I think you said that you studied in the US, and I'm sure New York has a lot of, you know, kind of like a mixture of feelings that's very colonial European, but still very American, and everything is very wide space. I'm sure a lot of your assignments involved in you having to go to museums or just like theater workshops and, you know, a different kind of creative process, because art is very lucid, and every photographer, I've had a guest before on this very podcast, and she's also my painting teacher, but also a mountaineer. She recommended one of the more interesting books that I ever read in my life, and the artist was called Marina Abramovic, and she did like live art. I mean, for someone who doesn't know that, or having grown in a different kind of society, I mean, not having a spec to appreciate different kind of art purely because we're not exposed to, you know, different sets or different emotions, and everything is very boxed for us. So I'm sure you had a very, you know, growing up process, because you were very young when you did go. And then the whole idea of having to find yourself and individualism, and then having to portray art, because artists are often, you know, propagated as somebody who's like very like lucid, and they go, and there's a lot of like substance involved sometimes, you know, for them to bring out the best in them. So how do you look at all of this, and how was your year abroad in like the US, and what kind of assignments did you do before we jump into your whole fancy Disney world?
College was really different for me, because the learning that we did there was a lot on the field. We did a lot of assignments that we wanted to do. So it meant us creating something impactful for either you or someone else. And you had to really look inward. I had people around me, like one of my friends from college, Balsa. He did this really cool project. And at 21, I was exposed to where he went around Atlanta, and he photographed homeless people in Atlanta. And he would project that image on in his space. So kind of his concept was bringing the homeless home. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about it even 10 years after that. It was really, and you're just around so many people, and you listen to their experiences, and you watch their work, you see their work grow through critiques, and you're talking about it, you're discussing it, and very little to do with what the rules of the art form are, or they're okay with you bending the rules, they're okay with you flexing out of the box a bit. And I think that was my biggest challenge, is to be okay with the fact that it's different from what's in your head, that art in your head is one way, and you're doing it in another way, but that's the process, and that's what I need to wrap my head around.
Yeah, when I was at MoMA, I had picked up this book. It was called 100 Pictures of What New York Is, and it's from a perspective of an artist, like a photographer. And it's so incredible because it had very predictable pictures of the subway, of the 14th Avenue, of the, you know, of Gossip Girls and all of that. But then the way it was put, you kind of feel like you're very, you know, involved in the process, and kind of like you are the whole surrounding person while you're even looking at these pictures, right? Yeah. So what was your assignment like? I know that now you do portrait and like wedding photography, which is a very niche segment of life, and there's a lot of laughs around it, there's a lot of positive emotions around it. I'm sure that not all photography or art is on the same length as, you know, happiness or joyfulness. Yeah. So what was your assignment back in the US?
So I did two big assignments when I was in the US. One was, it's very similar to Humans of New York or Humans of Bombay or any of those, where I would talk, I went to Savannah, which is in Georgia, and then I would just go to random places and talk to random people, and I would get them to give me like a quote that something that they said, maybe in their handwriting. And that was, I did that because I was very lonely. This whole process is, you're going and you're studying and you're learning different things, but it's also a very lonely country to be in from India and growing up with so many people. So just to feel a little less alone, that idea was to just put myself in like, and the idea was that y'all are all strangers, but y'all are strangers together. So you're not really a stranger in that sense, because that was one project. And the other project that I remember doing was a little bit more, I hadn't finished it even then, but it was about women today and basically get their kitchen or their something around the kitchen area to project that on them, where they're trying to be different roles and we're expected to have to take care of the house and the kitchen and all of those things as a woman and as you're growing older. So I had multiple women, different ages, just doing different things around the kitchen, which were not cooking. So that was one project, which I haven't fully finished yet.
Oh, that's so incredible. Because I think when I started off the podcast as well, one of my major ambitions was to bring in, you know, kind of ordinary people with like exceptionally passionate backgrounds to just make anyone listening to the podcast feel that, okay, you know, you don't need to be, you know, in the today's social media modern / world, you know, to follow a kind of viralism, but there's also so much more subtleness to art or just general being. And that brings me to the next question. You did also have a very fancy post effect of going to the US. You worked with Disney.
Yeah.
And you were very young when you did that as well.
Yeah.
So Disney, when you grow up, I'm sure you kind of like grew up with certain characters in your mind. You thought that Disney was, oh my God, it's going to be a magic wand filled with like, you know, sprinklers. And then you go there, then you see the creative process is a complete 360 degree shift to what you see on, you know, on the creatives or the end process. So what was your take on Disney?
Disney was probably the best time of my life. I feel like I was in the cusp of growing up and not grown yet. And I got into that field and it was amazing. I had the best experience. Everybody was great. There were a lot of fun. I went to shoot events with them. Interns usually, at least at that point, they would not be shooting events. I would edit for multiple photographers. They were all super helpful. They were mentors. And the process is, yeah, it's a little mundane and it's a little boring because end of the day you go and you shoot, you don't really know what you're going to get, and you come back and you sit at the edit table and that's like any other, you're going to hope that you get good stuff. So that creative process was, it put some structure into me, because in my head creative was like an artist, and you know, you have your moods and you have art that influences you and affects you and it's all over the place. And how do you try to make a business out of something that you're passionate about? I learned through Disney, because they had structures in place. They knew what to do. They knew what the next procedures were after you did a shoot. So all those things that I use today, I feel like that was transformative at Disney and just the people around.
Yeah, I remember watching, I was consuming a lot of YouTube because I was a huge foodie when I was growing up, and YouTube was just, you know, put in an influencer segment, and I used to watch very obsessively this one particular like, you know, I think channel back then, it's called BuzzFeed. And I just, one of the things that I absolutely loved was, I just loved the whole process of food and creation and art and, you know, just the whole idea of MasterChef Australia and having, you know, grown up with that, because it's such a serious competition. Yeah. But what you remember or what you take away from MasterChef Australia is that the, you know, the community.
So healthy, yeah.
Yeah, the community, everyone's so involved and they kind of focus so much on it. You kind of make your whole idea shift about, you know, even in competition on creative process, you know, there can be a community. And same with BuzzFeed. I still remember the food, the whole process, you know, there was a lot of BTS that goes behind it and how friends would just lend you, like, I don't know, a tablecloth or like a couple of cutlery, you know, and just to ensure that, you know, your budget is met. So the whole idea of Disney for me in my head is that, okay, there is like a bunch of creators. And then you guys just work on, I don't know, SCADA or like some kind of prototype where, you know, you edit and then you put in the characters into life. But you said you were actually in the visualization aspect of things.
So interesting. I have a funny story for this too. I got the internship at Disney and I went to Florida. I've been there for a month and I called my mom and she was obsessed with me getting married at that point. So she would be like, oh, are you meeting anyone new? And I'm like, no, I mean, everybody at office is kind of married and they have their own families. And she's like, what? But there's so many people who come to Disney. So I'm like, what is it that you think I do exactly? Do you think I'm standing at that ride and like a photo pass where I'm like, hey, please come and stand here? So I didn't work at Disney World, but I worked at it was on the same campus, if I can say that. But there was a smaller office called Disney Fine Art Photography, and they did events such as weddings, quinceañeras, portraits. Even before Magic Kingdom opened, we could go and do those portraits with the clients. So what was the question?
What did you do at Disney?
Oh, yeah. So it started off with just being an intern and, like, you know, doing research and social media. And then the more you get to know them and the more you're telling them that you're interested in editing or for taking photos, then they also, like, it was a six-month internship. So by the end of 6 months, I had done everything that they all do. So, but it was just like any other event company, but the company was Disney. And we could go to Magic Kingdom to take photos for portraits or couple portraits and stuff like that. So it was not so much the at the park and taking pictures of people who are attending the rides, but just people who wanted a portrait session if they came to Disney. So that was fun. It was good fun. Sometimes I want to go back there too. They gave me a fake green card because they couldn't sponsor Visa and everyone was really sad. So they made a small fake green card for me with my photo and they were like, if we could hand out green cards, then you would get one. So.
Oh, that's so sweet. And I also think that now we have to talk about the world that you have created for yourself, which is Mansi Mahesh Photography.
Yeah.
And you do have a team that works with you,
yeah.
Who are very similarly aligned in terms of interest as you do. And I also wanted to ask what goes behind the pre-visualization process, the editing process, the lighting, and, you know, all of the non-glamorous part that we don't see on the outcome of the picture.
I don't know if this is going to sound funny or odd, but honestly, I don't plan at all for any of my shoots. I know the client. I speak to them on the phone and I can kind of, I go a lot by how I'm feeling with the person, how I'm feeling about the shoot. And I rely a lot on that, luckily or otherwise. So I talk to them and I go in with I just want them to feel comfortable and I want them to feel as natural as possible. So I'm always trying to create a space for them to feel and allow themselves to feel like that. There's no visualization. There's no lighting. Sometimes once you get into the technicalities of it, for me personally, I find that you're carried away in that and you're not really like in the moment and you're missing out on like so many smaller moments that are happening. So I just like to go to their house, their space, and it's 1 hour. We just hang out. It's like hanging out. We talk. We eat if they want to. We just do a bunch of things. And they'll get pictures that reflect that time together with each other, I guess. So no visualization. I do a lot of my work on post. So I like editing a lot. I feel like it really can tell you can tell the difference between two people. And if you give the same preset to two people, they won't be able to edit it the same way. Just your eye and what makes sense to you. So I think a lot of my work goes into editing. I remove objects on the wall. I fix lightings. Sometimes I replace eyes if one person's not looking correctly and I have the eye. So I think I enjoy that. That's where I get more creative, I think.
And what is post? What is this medium post? Do you use it for editing?
Yeah. So, no, it's post-processing. So after any shoot, then I post-process all the photos. I take them into Lightroom, I color correct them, make sure they're in the same tone that I want. Then I go into Photoshop and I obsessively look at different things that are distracting me from the core of what the picture is going to do for me. Like, so yeah, that's my editing process. So I take a lot of time while editing, more than trying to fix over there what lighting and what basic. You have to know your camera, what it does, what and all the features. There's so much access to all the kind of information that you can get today, so much exposure that I feel like the only thing like differentiating two people and two people's work is their edit style. And that also now you can mimic. So yeah, a lot of my work goes into the post-processing of the photos, not the visualization of what happened. So after it happens, I'm like, okay, how best to give these photos.
But how does the Lightroom look like in today's time? Is it still pitch dark and it has a red light hanging somewhere?
Yeah, that's the dark room, actually. Dark room space is completely a vibe. And I think it's like, it's if you're into it, it's really, really nice. And that I don't think you want to change too much, because that's the idea. Like when you're developing and printing and you see that photograph come to life and you're really like, oh my God, this is crazy.
Your baby.
Yeah, it's like blank yeah. paper and yeah. there's like your image on that. It's wonderful. I don't think the first time you do it, it's like, wow, that feeling you can never forget. Yeah. And that you'll never get yeah. in a Lightroom today yeah. when you're using to edit.
Yeah.
But Different magic.
Aspects, yeah.
Yeah.
I also wanted to know, like, what was your very first camera? And what's your dream camera? And who's that one photographer? Like, it could be in a different scenario of things. A wildlife photographer, an inclusive photographer, any kind or any genre. So, what do you have such kind of inspirations?
Yeah, I really like this photographer called Matthew Pillsbury. He's in the States and he takes long exposure shots of the environment. So he'll take I think there's a picture of Brooklyn Bridge and everybody's moving and you can just, the lights are still. And that kind of depth in a photograph, I feel like is very inspiring. Like I want there to be multiple stories you can get from one photo. So that's something that I think I'd like to say that I'm inspired by him and I try to do not the same style, but just trying to bring different kinds of depth. How do you bring depth into it? And when I look at his photographs, I'm in awe because it's so nice and they're all blurry and it's technically magnificent and it's printed big. And so, yeah, I think Matthew Pillsbury is a good guy to.
And what's your first camera and what is your dream camera now?
My first camera was a Canon 550D. Okay. We had to get it in college. But funnily enough, it's never been about the camera or the equipment for me because, again, for me, a lot of my work comes in post. So while the camera is great, and I don't have a, I have lots of cameras I want to buy. I want to buy the new Sony that's coming up. But really, I feel like beyond the camera, it's just the how you make them feel and how that comes out. So camera, not a big technical, oh, this camera is really nice. There are wonderful cameras. There's a Fujifilm, which is really nice and interesting. It gives you like a film feel if you want, and you can also edit it. So it's like a little bit of both. I use a Sony camera, mirrorless camera, and that's been wonderful. I used to use Canon and switched to Sony.
Yeah, and if you have this one dream project that you want to be a part of, do you have anything, A, B? And what is that you want to wish for yourself, you know, for the years to come, you know, how you'd like to see yourself grow? Would you like to still be in the space of wedding and portrait, or is there something you'd like to expand in your window?
Yeah. Ever since I started doing photography, it's been the consistent thing that's been happening for me is that it's very not stable. It's very unstable. Got all this. So it's been very unstable. Like, you go into it and you're thinking that, you know, yeah, I love doing what I'm doing, but there are some months there's no work. There are some months there's a lot of work, and you're overwhelmed either way. Like, when you have a lot of work, you're overwhelmed because you have to edit, you have to put it up on social media, you have to, and if there's no work, you're also stressed because you still have to do the same things. So for me, honestly, the thing that I want to focus on now in my 30s, when I'm not in my 20s, is trying to find a good balance between not being overwhelmed at all, just being having work and feeling good. And that's a feeling that I'm leaning into only after my 30s, where I'm not feeling like earlier I would feel bad if someone goes to some other photographer, or I would feel bad if they didn't think of wanting to come to me, or they didn't like my work. And today at 30, I feel I'm in a space where I feel comfortable saying that, hey, this is my work and this is my work. Like, not trying to be something else. I'm not fighting for essentially any, those who come, and just trying to be at peace with that. So that's what I'm most wanting for myself, I think, because I've realized that I did content writing for a brand. I did social media marketing for another brand. I taught English for kids, IELTS. And somehow this photography just stuck through. Like, if I tried to navigate, I did graphic design, and I was like, okay, you know, I have to be busy, and I have to be like, every day I have to have something to do. And that was like a full different feel. But now I'm feeling like, how much have I tried to move away from it? I'm stuck to it. I come back to it and it gives me happiness. Like, when I meet a portrait session, I'm going to do a portrait session, I come back feeling really happy and fulfilled that I'm doing something that I love, and they are also like, and it's going to hang in their walls maybe. They're going to think about it when they're happy maybe. So I love it. And just to be at peace with that and be like, okay, put your head down, keep working, and the rest will follow.
And do you have a dream project that you want to be a part of?
My dream project. Have you seen Anne Hathaway's Intern?
Yes.
To work in an office like that, I feel like I've never done it. So that's, I keep dreaming about it. I'm like, wow, that sounds, looks, just to have a space with like-minded people doing similar things, working towards a common goal.
I think even bold type, you know, in the recent times, you know, a bunch of girls, you know, they were in a very creative process, but they were still working for a magazine, and there were different segments like styling and photography. Yeah, and that's cool, right? Like, because such creative spaces are up and coming in India, but it's not very viable because we consume a lot of content on digital format these days. And so, one of my final questions is on branding and social media marketing. And how do you think your photography company sees visibility? Do you think Instagram is, you know, the ABC now, or do you still feel like people are looking into other aspects when they come to you?
I think Instagram is super powerful. Any kind of social media today, if you're good at it, it's superb. It's a very powerful tool to get clients. But for me, I feel like I'm horrible at it. I cannot put myself in front of the camera. But for me, it serves as a place where I can meet some different people and clients. So a lot of inquiries come through Instagram, for example, or Facebook sometimes. And I can serve it as a portfolio. So I have done all these weddings, and people who want to see some kind of work, they can see it. So primarily I'm using social media for those two things, where I'm not doing nearly as much as I could, but it's super time consuming. So doing it all is you have to have where a level dedication, where a level like focus and mind space to think that, okay, next. All the days I don't have that. Some days I'm emotionally drained and physically drained. So on those days I use it like how I
continue. So you think the less is more, the more authentic you are on these platforms, you kind of attract a portfolio of things that you do want to see for yourself?
No, I think each person has their own way of doing it. For me, predominantly, it's come through social, not it's come through word of mouth. So that works for me better because clients, friends of clients understand my style a little bit better than someone who's just coming without any experience. But kudos to people who can actually make Instagram work. And a lot of people are doing great things. And it's really fun as a consumer to see that.
Any page that you do like? Who is doing a great job with photography and social media?
I like a lot of pages. I really like Aishwarya Ashok's work. I think she's fab. She's very she's very chill and easy to work with. And her tones are great. Pravesh and Emmanuel are my teammates. So they're also amazing. And there's Anita Kamraj, who's doing some fab work. Lots in the social media space. So I like seeing different kinds of work. Honestly, today, if you ask me, I'm not threatened by it. I'm not feeling sad by it. I'm feeling like inspired. I'm like, oh, wow, this is something I didn't think would happen. So multiple pages, multiple people, different approaches. And I just take bits that I feel like resonate with me. Supposing I'm saying, okay, cool, this person is doing a cool thing on Instagram. I might want to try it. But I'll take only bits that feel like me. Like Elame doesn't feel always like me. So yeah. I think that's what works for me.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. And, you know, one of my favorite parts of the podcast is the very bit of things. And this is because this is something that truly impacts me. And it tells a lot more about your personality. And for someone who's been tuned in so long, I hope they do wait for this bits of things. So we end every podcast by asking the guests, what's your favorite movie and what's your favorite book that changed your life? Do you have any?
I don't have a book that changed my life. I'm currently reading this book called Happy Place by Emily Henry, and it's been chill. It's nothing. It's very relaxed, and I feel like today I'm just looking for things that give me that, because I get anxious very easily. But my favorite movie that changed my life is Panchtantram. I think it really I have happy, relaxed, really good memories to that movie. Can always put it on when I'm feeling bad and I'm laughing for like good 20 minutes to 2 hours. I'm laughing throughout. So that movie really changed my life. And I feel like there's so many things happening in that movie, but it's when you're looking at it from like outside, you're laughing at it. So if you look at a problem from one step back, I feel like, okay, maybe you could laugh at it.
That's great. I think I stop here, you know, generally with all the guests, but because you're an artist, I'm very intrigued to ask you one final question. What do you feel is that one thing that an artist should have? You know, it could be from your inner perspective, like you just said now. When I watch a movie, I just related to the fact that no matter how big the issue or the problem is, when you see it from just one step back, it might seem so minor and so hilarious, you know. Yeah. So what do you think is the one thing that an artist or you feel that should have?
I think patience. I really feel like some days in this field, it's a male-dominated field, so you have imposter syndrome and you're constantly second guessing whether your work is good or whether you're enough or whether this person is doing. So patient, just it'll all work. You just have to wait and ride it through and just believe and do the work. I'm not trying to be like, hey, don't do any work and be patient. But just I think each person has their own path and you gotta like tune the noise out and take the good.
Yeah. So, yeah, that brings us to the end of this podcast, Mansi. Thank you very much for speaking with me.
It has
been wonderful. I throughout the podcast, you know, I've seen different shades of your personality because I also worked with you. You know, it was very intense, it was very emotional, and then it's really a lot of fun. And there's one thing that you maintain, I feel like, from A to Z is like a lot of cheerfulness. And you really want to bring in that aspect to every,
photos
of your life. And yeah. I do wish your portfolio increases
thank
and many
you.
More people see your work and
thank you for having me
and all the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you.